argument this morning is Treloar against the Postal Service. Mr. McBride.
Thank you. May it please the Court. My name is Matt McBride, and I represent Ken Treloar. We're here today with regard to what is the true standard that equates to fair and provable justification for termination under the collective bargaining agreement between this particular Postal Service employee and the Postal Service. More particularly, the question is, what is the proper standard for determining whether or not just cause existed for the termination of Mr. Treloar?
I don't see how that can be before us. Your brief treats us as if we were labor law arbitrators applying the collective bargaining agreement. But this is a hybrid case, and you can't get to first base unless the union violated its duty of fair representation. But I don't even see an argument to that effect in your brief. What's the argument that the union violated its duty of fair representation?
The argument in that respect is that they did not even perform any perfunctory investigation. They did nothing. They called no witnesses. They interviewed no witnesses.
Why is that required?
Because in this particular circuit, there's case law that says you cannot perform no investigation. I mean, there's some different language between the opinions, but there's actual precedent dealing with a perfunctory, less than perfunctory investigation, essentially doing nothing. And that's what we allege. And in this particular case, that's the district court never even reached that particular issue, whether or not the union breached the duty of fair representation. And the record is extremely lengthy, and I cited, I think, in my initial brief, a case that discussed that. In this type of situation, for me to brief the breach of duty of fair representation issue when the district court never reached that issue seemed to be not appropriate under these circumstances.
Win without winning on that issue and just deciding to ignore it. And to overturn this judgment, you have to show two things: the union violated the duty of fair representation and that the collective bargaining agreement was violated. Without showing both of those things, you lose. And choosing just to ignore one of them, well, there we are.
Well, the fact that the district court never reached that issue and essentially it is sitting there, the only issue that was before this case, this court, is the issue of just cause. And, for instance, if the court reversed it.
It's not the only issue.
Well, the other, and following up on that particular question, then, I don't even think there is anything that was brought up to the contrary. There's some argument made as to what Mr. Smith didn't or didn't do, but the focus of the briefing in this particular case was on the just cause argument, is that that was the only thing that was addressed. Mr. Smith did nothing. He actually did nothing. And then when he found out that actually what had occurred is the Postal Service had provided false information to the union in order to partially gain for them to withdraw his grievance, he did nothing after that fact, even though what evidence which is in this record shows that Mr. Young says in his deposition, if he would have known that, he could have got on the phone right then and fixed it. So it's clearly an issue about the breach of a duty of fair representation, and I think Your Honor is correct in the sense that that's where plaintiffs most of the time lose in these situations. And the case is extremely strong on the breach of duty of fair representation. It just was not addressed below, and that's why it wasn't brought here. And
Look, I will just say this one last time. Any litigant can defend its judgment on any ground that was raised in the district court. This ground was raised in the district court. It's an issue on which you have to prevail in order to win this litigation. The union's brief argues that it did not violate the duty of fair representation, and you chose to ignore that. I don't see how anything else need be said.
Well, under the circumstances, I would request the ability to submit a post-argument memorandum.
You had the ability to present that and chose not to. We allow a brief and a reply brief. That's it.
Well, again, I would just reiterate what I said on that particular issue. The evidence is there. I did raise the issue of Mr. Young and what could have been done in I believe quoted from his particular deposition, that he could have fixed all of this without any hesitation if he knew what was going on. This is a simple issue that was totally created by the Postal Service initially providing false information to the union in order to induce them to withdraw the grievances. And from then on, it rolled downhill. And when Mr. Truelar ultimately prevailed and the Department of Labor said he didn't do anything wrong, they did nothing further in that aspect either. So I think there is evidence in the record that does support the notion that the plaintiff did create a genuine issue of material fact on the breach of duty of fair representation issue. And I think that there is enough there to suggest that. And again, that's why I believe that it was not addressed in the district court. The issue that the district court had a problem with was the just cause in the Postal Service. Certainly, if it was an easily resolvable issue, I believe that's where we would have gone. Again, I did cite a case in my brief that talks about when you have a lengthy record and complicated issues, understand the circuit precedent that this court may affirm on any matter in the record, but that I urge this court to defer that until upon remand, because briefing an issue that I did not lose below seemed inappropriate. Ultimately, I do understand that we need to prevail on both claims. With regard to the just cause argument, this case is just like Linton versus the Postal Service. There's not a lot of law on this issue, and that's because the district court applied a standard, which I've called a could-have-concluded standard, which does not even take into account the reasonableness of the action of the Postal Service. The court just determined that if the Postal Service, in fact, believed Mr. Truelar did something wrong, that was enough to terminate him. We know from looking at the Joint Contract Administration Manual and the contract or collective bargaining agreement that that is not accurate. The collective bargaining agreement requires that the conduct must be intentional in order to terminate him. And Mr. Reese indicated he didn't even consider that fact, which is in of itself further proof about what didn't happen that should have happened. In this particular case, it's simple. The just cause test involves an objective view in which intent to deceive must be proved, and that's the Linton case. In the Linton case, the individual filled out an application form and didn't put down that he'd been convicted of a crime. He did not believe he'd been convicted of a crime, and ultimately the Sixth Circuit upheld a previous reversal, indicating that without any proof of intent to deceive, that just cause cannot be found. And in this particular case, not only do we have that situation, but we have the admission from the Postal Service that clear and convincing evidence is the standard that management must prove in order to sustain just cause under this collective bargaining agreement. I reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. McBride. Mr. Brooks.
May it please the court, counsel. As Your Honor pointed out, the decision below can be affirmed on any ground by this court. In representing the Postal Service, I will address the just cause grounds that the court ruled on, and the remaining arguments will be made by counsel for the union.
Do you think this was timely filed?
Pardon, Your Honor?
Do you think this was timely filed, this appeal process and everything that they filed and before they filed their claim? Did you think it made a six-month time?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. The union will address that issue more particularly, but I believe that given Truelar's own acknowledgement of the information that the union, local union, had provided him that they would not do anything more for him, that he should have taken action at that point, and that he is basically relying on an informal process to try and extend the limitations period for bringing his action.
Okay, I guess if that's the other argument, then you go ahead with yours.
Thank you, Your Honor. I believe that Truelar has missed the relevant question in this case. To the extent he's arguing that the Postal Service had to prove that he actually lied on his workers' compensation forms, we think he did, but the relevant question is, based on the facts that the Postal Service had at the time it fired Truelar, did the Postal Service reasonably believe that he lied on his workers' compensation forms? And to that question, The answer is an unequivocal yes. At the time he was fired, Trular had filled out several dozen claims to receive workers' compensation benefits. Each of the forms that he filled out had a broad question: have you ever worked outside your federal job during the period for which you are claiming disability? Includes salaried, self-employed, commissioned, volunteer, etc. Trular either failed to answer that question or answered with a no, despite the fact that he was getting paid for working with a band. Postal Inspection Service investigated, discovered that he was getting paid for working with the band while receiving benefits. They confronted Trular. Trular provided an explanation about offsetting expenses and misunderstanding the forms. Trular's managers received the investigative memorandum, rejected his explanation, and fired him under the provisions of the Employee Labor Relations Manual. There's four provisions there. They essentially require a Postal Service employee to be honest, reliable, trustworthy. They require a duty of candor, and certainly Trular was less than candid on these forms. He was a letter carrier entrusted to carry the mail with very minimum supervision. The Postal Service certainly was reasonable in expecting him to be candid in forms that he submitted to receive benefits from the government. The just cause analysis that the district court applied was appropriate. Just because the court looked at it from the Postal Service's perspective does not make the test subjective. The fact is that it's the familiar reasonable belief test. Did the Postal Service have a reasonable belief that Trular lied on those forms based on the objective facts before it? And the court has seen that type of test often. Just cause required a fair and provable justification for the Postal Service's firing. And in this instance, there is a fair and provable justification. If there are no questions, we would ask that you affirm the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks. Mr. Herman.
Good morning, Your Honors. I think in Your Honor's first question, you put your finger on the nub of this case, which is that this is a hybrid case, that he doesn't get to have a federal court review the merits of the breach of contract claim unless he can show that the union breached its duty of fair representation. He can show a triable issue of fact as to whether the union breached its duty of fair representation in not taking the grievance to arbitration. He cannot possibly do that in this case, Your Honor. The law is very settled in this circuit and every other circuit, in accordance with Supreme Court guidance, that unions have extreme wide latitude of reasonableness in terms of reaching the decision as to whether to take a grievance to arbitration. And in this circuit, several cases of the panels have shown that unless it can be shown that the union's position is not even colorable, you cannot second guess. It's not the business of the federal courts to second guess a union's decision in this matter. And in this case, I think the record is overwhelmingly clear that it was well within the wide range of reasonableness. In fact, it was extremely reasonable for the union to reach a good faith determination that these grievances would not likely succeed at arbitration and therefore not proceed with it. Certainly, if a federal judge, the judge below, had no difficulty finding that there was just cause for the Postal Service to terminate this man, it's absolutely clear that it was within the realm of reasonableness for the union official to reach the same conclusion and to not pursue the grievances. In fact, it's true as a matter of law. Moreover, the evidence, you know, there's some allegation that the union conducted no investigation, but the union had plenty of information about this situation in the investigative memo. There's no requirement for it to independently interview eyewitnesses. There was plenty of solid evidence, and indeed evidence that the plaintiff does not really contest, the way he filled out these forms, to support the union's judgment that this would not prevail at arbitration. In fact, and of course, the issue at arbitration The notice of removal did not say that Mr. Truelove failed to satisfy a certain federal statute. It said that he violated four different, as Mr. Brooks said, four different reasons under the Employee and Labor Relations Manual. And those are incorporated into the collective bargaining agreement. And certainly the union official could reach the reasonable conclusion. In fact, it's, I think, sort of self-evident that he reached a reasonable conclusion in concluding that that would establish just cause for the termination, and therefore it was basically a waste of resources to pursue arbitration. That's well within the duty of fair representation. There's also not a scintilla of evidence, Your Honor, that there was any, you know, as Your Honors are well aware, there's a tripartite test for the breach of the duty of fair representation. There's arbitrary conduct, discriminatory conduct, and bad faith conduct. There's no evidence on those.
Mr. Brooks promised that you would address the timeliness issue, too.
I will.
You should
I will,
do that
Your
while
Honor.
Time remains.
I was going to say, if you didn't have any questions about those other branches, I will move to timeliness. This court, in several decisions cited in our brief, including the Christensen case and the Pantoja case, say that basically tolling, there's no question that he was told by the local union in October, whatever it was, 17th or something, 2005, that the local union wasn't going to do anything for him. So the only legal issue is whether a subsequent letter to the president of the national union somehow told the statute of limitations. And Christensen, Pantoja hold that informal letters do not toll, that tolling of that kind is limited to required or formal appeal processes. Now, I am not contending that, and there was no required or informal or formal appeal process here. Sorry. Let me state that again. There was no required or formal appeal process here. This letter simply does not toll it as a matter of law. The judge admitted herself that this was a close call on which reasonable minds could disagree. We submit that the letter to President Young, which he could not, also the district court overstates the record by saying that the national union had authority and often did overrule the local branches. That is simply not the case. What President Young testified to is that if a national officer were convinced that a mistake had been made in a grievance, they could approach the Postal Service officials, and if both sides agreed, they might be able to do something about it. But that does not mean that that is a formal appeal process. It requires consent by both parties to do something about it. And in this case, I think it's, you know, I think it's a bit of a close question, and to be honest, as the district court said. But I think in this case, the letter to President Young, given the fact that the collective bargaining agreement makes it absolutely clear the local officials have authority to resolve grievances. Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. McBride?
The crux of the issue with just cause is that the reasonable belief test has absolutely no application here whatsoever. And if you refer to appendix page 23, that's the quote from the Joint Contract Administration Manual, which talks about the two things that can happen that management can do. One is discipline, and then there's everything else. The everything else, other than discipline, is the reasonable belief test. Just cause is not a reasonable belief test. And that's because reasonable belief just contains one side version of the events. That is, I use the definition of somebody believing something happened and actually didn't happen and ultimately having no justification for it. You can't sustain that under the CBA and under the just cause principles. And if you think of it conceptually, it could never be sustained because there'd never be any protection to union employees who could be terminated if the Postal Service management said, I reasonably believe you did it. Doesn't matter whether you did it or you didn't do it, even if I'm going to fire you, and you're out the door. That effectively offers no protection. There is evidence in the record that Mr. Smith from the union never contacted Mr. Trular whatsoever to tell him that he was withdrawing the grievances. And as a matter of fact, I stood in the district court before Judge Pallmeyer, not knowing myself what had happened to the two grievances. And there was some coy colloquy in front of the bench about what happened to them. So the notion in relation to the statute of limitations as to any tolling, first of all, as I stood there in court, he had no idea what happened to the two grievances that were pending when he was fired. The initial phone call that was made on the 17th was a brief phone call to Mr. Smith in which he wanted to know what was going on, why was he fired. There was no issue brought up about these two pending grievances, and that's why he set up the meeting later on the 25th and then later wrote a letter. And the actual process is now called ADR within the Postal Service. They developed this process, this appeal process, because the union had thousands upon thousands of grievances that were backlogged. And so they created this process where an appeal could be had.
Thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.